অন্নে হৃদয় মন মোর মন বৃন্দাবন মনে মনে এক করি জানি তাহার তোমা পদ দয় খরাহ যদি উদয় তবে তোমা পূর্ণ কৃপা মানি অনুবাদ ট্রান্সলেশন Speaking in the mood of Srimati Radharani, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, For most people, the mind and the heart are one, but because my mind is never separated from Vrindavan, I consider my mind and Vrindavan to be one. My mind is already Vrindavan, and since you, speaking to Krishna, since you like Vrindavan, will you please place your lotus feet there? I would deem that your full mercy. Purport. The mind's activities are thinking, feeling, and willing by which the mind accepts materially favorable things and rejects the unfavorable. This is the consciousness of people in general. But when one's mind does not accept and reject, but simply becomes fixed on the lotus feet of Krishna, then one's mind becomes as good as Vrindavan. Wherever Krishna is, there also are Srimati Radharani, the gopis, the cowherd boys, and all the other inhabitants of Vrindavan. Thus, as soon as one fixes Krishna in his mind becomes identical with Vrindavan. In other words, when one's mind is completely free from all material desires and is engaged only in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then one always lives in Vrindavan and nowhere else. Pranonat Shunomara Sapta Nivedan Braja Amashadan Tahatomar Shangam Napaile Narahe Jivan. Translation. My dear Lord, kindly hear my true submission. My home is Vrindavan, and I wish your association there. But if I do not get it, then it will be very difficult for me to keep my life. Purport. Only when the mind is free from designations can one desire the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The mind must have some occupation. If a person is to be free of material things, his mind cannot be vacant. There must be some subject matters for thinking, feeling, and willing. Unless one's mind is filled with thoughts of Krishna, feelings for Krishna, and a desire to serve Krishna, the mind will be filled with material activities. Those who have given up all material activities and have ceased thinking of them should always retain the ambition to think of Krishna. Without Krishna, one cannot live, just as a person cannot live without some enjoyment for his mind. Cell phones off, please. Everyone has a cell phone. No one can live without a cell phone. So please take it out of your pocket and turn it off, unless you want to record the lecture. These are very intimate words of supplication recorded here in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita of Srimati Radharani to Krishna. Actually, it's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaking, but he's speaking fully in the mood of Srimati Radharani, who is beseeching Krishna to return to Vrindavan. In the purports, Srila Prabhupada discusses tattva. The verses are saturated with bhakti rasa, which is roughly translated as the juice, the sweet juice of devotion, bittersweet juice of devotion. But Srila Prabhupada discusses tattva, he discusses Vraja tattva by saying that wherever Krishna is, there also are Srimati Radharani, the gopis, the cowherd boys, and all the other inhabitants of Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada also discusses some basic principles of Sambandha Gyan and Avideya Gyan. These topics of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, they are fully on the platform of Prayojana Tattva, or the highest level of that one can attain in devotional service, or even to be able to discuss what Radha is feeling for Krishna. We cannot come to the platform of Radha, but even to be able to discuss that is the highest level of devotional service. But Srila Prabhupada also discusses in his commentary topics of Sambandha Gyan and Abhideya Gyan. But devotional service is conducted in three levels, three broad levels. The first level is to understand one's relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is called Sambandha Gyan. And to act in that relationship in the practice of devotional service is called Abhideya. And to fully attain the perfection of life is called Prayojana. Srila Prabhupada has in his purports discussed these highly elevated and intimate topics in a manner that is suitable for the great majority of his readers, who are not really eligible to discuss these topics at all. Anya hridaya man, others' heart is their mind. So as Srila Prabhupada points out here, that the mind is always busy in sankalpa vikalpa, accepting and rejecting. And as long as one is on the platform of sense gratification, of not pure and fully fixed in devotional service, then one will always think everything that we see, touch, taste, smell, feel, or think about, we do so in terms of whether it is favorable for my sense gratification or not. And if it is, we accept it, and if not, we reject it. This is the business of the mind in material consciousness. And surrender to Krishna is the first two principles of that are anukulyasya sankalpa, pratikulyasya bhajanam, accepting that which is favorable for serving Krishna and rejecting that which is not. So it's training the mind to stop thinking about what I want and to start thinking about what Krishna wants. This is the process of devotional service. And when one is fully practiced to always do what Krishna wants, then that is called full surrender to Krishna, Atmanivedana. So these two processes, anukulyasya sankalpa, pratikulyasya vajanam, doing only what is favorable for serving Krishna and rejecting what is not favorable for him, is these are the first two of these six limbs of Sharanagati, or the process of surrender. In the process of surrender to Krishna, one decides that now I want to give my life for Krishna. But at the same time, we have many, from time immemorial, we have many material attachments. So we're not able to do so immediately. Actually, we could do so immediately if we had enough strength of mind, but we have many material attachments. Therefore, we're trained in the process of devotional service so that our heart and our mind become one in the determination to serve Krishna, so that our heart automatically runs toward Krishna. Of course, bhakti is an affair of the heart, ultimately. But because we have so many material attachments, therefore we have to make a conscious decision to surrender to Krishna. We can begin to control the mad mind, which even though we may be attracted to Krishna consciousness, we have to make a decision, an intelligent decision, to surrender to Krishna. Intelligence means that is a special function of human life. Even animals have intelligence, but only humans can make the intelligent decision to perform devotional service. Only humans can consider questions, atato brahma jignasan, what is the purpose of life? Why are we suffering in this world? How can I get out from this condition? So bhakti can be performed in all species of life, but generally in the human form of life, because more intelligence is there. So bhakti is ultimately an affair of the heart, but the heart and the mind in pure consciousness, or even in contaminated consciousness, they are one. But in human life, we just can't follow our impulses. If children do that, babies. But they have to be trained not to do so. Otherwise, babies, they can just kill themselves very easily if they're left unsupervised for even a second, as every mother knows. Because, especially when they start to toddle and move around, they can pull something down, some vase which will fall on their head and smash them, or they'll drink some bleach or something. They have tremendous capacity to just do what they want to do without intelligently considering it and making a decision. Just when one is somewhat grown up, one can decide and one can see, oh, this is this liquid is a purple color and it looks very nice for drinking, but on the outside it says toilet cleaner, so I shouldn't drink it. One's intelligent enough to do so. But a baby doesn't know. So the mind has to be there. Even in mind and intelligence have to be deployed, otherwise we're just retarded intelligence. We can't function even on the material platform. And in bhakti also, to control the mad mind, the intelligence and the mind must be used. That Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, udharet atmanatmanam natmanam avasadayet atmaiva hi atmano bandhur atmaiva ripur atmanaha. That one must control the one must control the mind with the intelligence. But the same word is used, atma. So practically the mind has to be controlled to use the mind. That means the mind has to be put under control of the intelligence, the higher intelligence. In material consciousness, the intelligence is used to make plans and strategies how to provide sense gratification for the mind. So one should not be controlled, one should not come under the control of the mind. Otherwise, the mind can be one's worst enemy. It can be one's best friend also, depending on whether we decide to be Krishna conscious or not, whether we decide to put our life's desires into serving Krishna, or whether we decide just to follow our impulses. In materialistic consciousness, we follow our impulses and use our bring our intelligence, harness our intelligence for trying to fulfill our animalistic propensities. Whereas the real use of intelligence is to subdue our animalistic propensities and act on a platform by which we can become free from suffering forever and understand that we have to serve Krishna. So intelligence is required. The mind has to be trained to serve Krishna. Now, I'm speaking on all of this, particularly in relation to a letter that I just received from a devotee in India, where she's talking about the Bhakti Vriksha program, and which is all very good, but I'll read out what she wrote and comment on that in relation to what I've been saying. She went to the first international Bhakti Vriksha campaign, and she says about that, it was really heart-touching. Note the word heart. To know and learn that it is an expanding community united as one family to take care of the spiritual growth and happiness of each devotee. The grammar's not so good. Anyway. Spiritual growth, happiness of each devotee, compassionate towards the non-devotees, hence actively engaged in preaching and training preachers, following the instructions of Lord Chaitanya to spread the holy name, thereby move towards establishing the golden age. So that's all very nice, isn't it? The next sentence, next two sentences, are also okay, but I need to comment on them. Maybe okay, but not fully okay. The process is through the heart and not the mind. All people touched by love, friendship, and care. And then the alarm bell went off in my mind. When you say no, the process is through the heart and not the mind. It became a little, a little alarmed. If you say not the mind, only the heart, then we're in trouble, because in materialistic consciousness, we are interested in sense gratification, subtle and gross. If we say not the mind, well, that's almost like Buddhism. The mind gets turned off. No mind, nothing. Now, it's true that in much of our preaching is to attract people on the emotional or sentimental platform. We perform festivals, Jagannath Rath Yatra, and various festivals which attract people. It attracts their senses, and that's wonderful. That's very good, because Krishna is all attractive. We want to attract people to Krishna. And if we only speak philosophy, not many people will be attracted. Generally, people are attracted to Krishna in the beginning via the senses, or via the senses and the mind, philosophically and emotionally. But if we propose to bring people via the heart and not the mind, then what's going to happen is we may bring many people, and that may be very good, but if we overly emphasize the heart and not the mind, then we are in danger of, well, we're likely to create many neophyte devotees, which if we're preaching widely, that's likely, because when you bring many people in quickly, then we tend to bring people in neophyte level. That's expected. That's not bad. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says about neophyte devotees that jaha komal shraddha she kanishta jan krame krame teho hoibe utam, that those who have pliable faith, weak faith, they're called kanishta adhikari, or neophyte devotees. And gradually they can also come to the topmost platform. Now, if we spread very widely, that means newcomers, many newcomers, always newcomers, And newcomer means that they're going to be not on the highest platform. They're going to be in the beginning, they are neophytes. So there's not wrong with that if they're brought to the higher platform, but, or the highest platform. But that is not possible to bring them to the highest platform if we only emphasize friendship, love, care, relationships. If we don't guide them to control the mind and senses in Krishna consciousness and understand who is Krishna and why we should surrender to him, then they're going to remain on the neophyte platform. And if they don't understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness as given by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, as given by Vyasadeva in Srimad Bhagavatam, and given by all our acharyas, most notably in the modern age by Srila Prabhupada, who labored, even while he was traveling all over the world preaching Krishna consciousness, he labored to produce his books. If we don't give the philosophy as given by them, which is it's food for the mind, but it's spiritual food to spiritualize the mind. If we don't give that, and if we emphasize too much the, if we say the heart and not the mind, then we're going to end up with neophytes, and then we're going to have misunderstandings. People are going to be easily exploited by others in the name of devotional service. And we're very likely to end up with upper sampradayas who, because it's easy to, or relatively easy to attract people, especially Indian people, by sentiment rather than understanding. Therefore, we're likely to end up with upper sampradayas who appear to be representing the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the teachings of Bhakti, but who are actually misrepresenting it and misguiding people, even though they do many things very well. But underlying it all is envy of Krishna, even though it might appear to be Bhakti. And a prime example of this, I'm going to say now, and some of you might get upset, I'm aware of that, is the Ramanandi Sampradaya of North India, who recite Ramcharitmanas and who talk about Ram, and they perform bhakti and they chant Ram Nam. But if at all you speak with any of their sadhus, then you'll find that their conception is that Rama is a representation of the impersonal. That the ultimate is impersonal. And so the whole thing, although it is very nice in many ways, but it's all laced with the poison of Mayavad. So actually no one can achieve love of Krishna or love of Rama, because they think that ultimately they're going to become Rama, or that Rama is not the ultimate truth. Which is why in the edition of Ramayana that I published, I gave a preface in which it said, Rama is the Supreme Personality. I started with that. And why I made an edition, you may say, well, why make an edition? Because I saw in everyone's home at that time, all our devotees, they had the Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan edition by Kamala Subramaniam, which is directly Mayavadi. So that's highly misleading and poisonous. So many people who present themselves to be devotees are not devotees, and they're able to mislead people because people are not very philosophical. People in general are not very philosophical. They tend to be sentimental. And that is often a criticism of devotees, that they're sentimentalists, they're not very philosophical. And that is not necessarily bad, because most people may not be very philosophical. You can't expect everyone to be a great scholar and a philosopher. And as long as people are guided by proper devotees, then they can come to the highest platform by chanting Harinam. But they have to understand some basics, otherwise they will be misguided. At the very least, everyone has to understand the very basics, otherwise they are likely to be misguided, either by their bogus guru, or if they have a bona fide guru, they'll still be misled by their own mind, because they're not in the habit, because they think that the heart is all in all, but their heart is full of material desires, which they don't understand. They mix it all up with devotional service in their own confused mind. And therefore, that they think that hearing from Guru is only to hear some pastimes, and the Guru is not meant to teach them actually what is devotional service. Now, we find that in the devotional life of India, it's common that people's secular life and their devotional life are mixed, because, well, that's the way it is. And Rama himself and Krishna himself, in their pastimes, they perform many common day-to-day activities. Just like Krishna is milking the cows. It's a very... Of course, Rama as a prince and a king, that's, most people don't get the opportunity to do that. But many people, they... at least in traditional India, they milk a cow. Nowadays, you go to the store and buy some milk. But traditionally, it was a commonly done thing. Or every householder would have a cow, and the gwala would come and milk the cow, and you'd see him do it in front. Gwala means cowherd man. So it's a very common thing. So Krishna he lives like us, and so we get people who, in their life, they'll be maybe working in the field and chanting the name of Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada described how in his childhood he would go with his sister to fly kites, and they would pray, "Govinda, make my kite fly higher." So in this way, I mean, it's not a call for pure devotional service, but they feel Krishna to be present in every phase of their life. But unless we hear from bona fide devotees, this can go too far. And we can take Krishna as our order supplier. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he often criticized, and Srila Prabhupada following in his footsteps, often criticized the attitude of thinking of Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as a supplier of fuel for the blazing fire of our material desire. Mm-hmm. Just to give an example of this, in the Vallabh Sampradaya, they have the idea of living with Krishna, that you have your own Thakurji, your Lala, your own Krishna, my Krishna. And then you serve him, you feed him, you fan him, you sing with him, and he's like your own little son. So, many years ago, actually, more than 30 years ago, one devotee told me how he'd visited one home, and the lady of the house, she was so much treating Gopal as her son, that she gave him a special nice seat next to her to sit and watch the TV. So this is not pure devotional service. But she thought it was. She thought, you see, she's so absorbed in bhav for Krishna because she hadn't been properly guided. Either her guru hadn't properly guided her, which was very likely, because in that sampradaya, they don't give any guidance. Or she thought that, well, we're already on that platform. And this is very common. They were already on the platform of just being with Krishna and living with Krishna. And this is very common among neophyte devotees, very common for them. They come in with their heart is attracted to Krishna, which is very good to be attracted to Krishna. But they tend to think that they're already on the highest platform right from the beginning. I'm feeling for Krishna. We're chanting the names of Krishna with feeling. And we often see people who chant with a lot of feeling, but after the chanting is over, they also engage in their mundane activities with a lot of feeling, with equal enthusiasm. So, to come out of material consciousness and separate our consciousness, or take our consciousness away from that which is mundane, we have to hear from the Shastra and the Vaishnavas about what is devotional service and how the mind has to be trained to serve Krishna. Unfortunately, many devotees don't like to hear this. Just to give an example, I am one of the traveling sannyasis within ISKCON who don't draw very big crowds, because I give lectures like this. Whereas if I was to give lectures with lots of pastimes and praise everyone, I'd probably get many people, I'd be more popular and more people would come. So to recite the pastimes of Krishna is very pleasing and purifying, but it's also required to hear the basic philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. So that we don't take the pastimes of Krishna to be something pleasing for my mind, so that I can understand what is sense gratification, subtle sense gratification. Bhakti can also be performed for the sake of subtle sense gratification, in which we don't understand the principle Krishnarthe kela chesta. Does anyone know what this means? It's the whole essence of devotional service. It means that the attitude of a devotee is that everything should be performed for the sake of Krishna, for Krishna's pleasure, not for my pleasure. So this is the essence. Atendriya priti vancha tare bale kam krishnendriya priti icha dhare premanam. The desire to satisfy my own senses is called karma or material lust. The desire to satisfy Krishna's transcendental senses, that is prema. So, pure love. So to hear topics of prema, we have to be qualified by being free from material desires, both gross and subtle. And there are many subtle material desires. I mean, apart from gross, there are gross material desires at various levels. And here in America, it can be very gross. Actually, anywhere it can be very gross, but grossly promoting material desire is American culture. I mean, there's also talk of freedom and justice, but it's all to facilitate people's sensual indulgence in sensual desire. That's modern America. So it can be on a very gross level. Copulation, intoxication, you know, long, high-sounding words for very low-class activities. There may be on the subtle level also. I mean, these are very gross activities, and they're less gross activities for sense gratification are on the intellectual level, discussing various intellectual topics about art and science. Then there is also the feeling I am on a better level than just totally gross sense gratification is the pleasure of being a dutiful husband or wife or son. Although in American culture, I don't think there's any even concept of being a dutiful son. I don't think the concept's there at all. Parents are just, they look after you and then you forget them, that's all. Unless you need something from them when you get older. So then the sense of national pride, I'm a patriotic American, I'm working for the good of the country. This is also some kind of sense gratification. It has nothing to do with Atma Dharma, the occupation of the soul to serve Krishna. Even in devotional service, there can be the feeling, see, I'm a very good devotee, which means that I'm thinking I'm better than others. Let others see how I'm doing bhakti. Let others be impressed by what a good singer I am. Mm-hmm. Let others be impressed by how good devotees my children are. So these are subtle desires. One has to be fully free of all of these so that one can be qualified to serve Radha and Krishna. Bishoy charya kobe shuddha hobe man tobe hamahera bo Sri Vrindavan. Only when the mind is fully free of material desires can one actually see Vrindavan as it is. We can go to Vrindavan, we should go to Vrindavan, take pilgrimage and go to the sites of Krishna's pastimes. But we cannot actually enter Vrindavan unless we have the mood of serving Vrindavan, which doesn't mean to facilitate the sense gratification of anyone there, but to serve Krishna with no other desire than to serve Krishna without any personal sense gratification. That is possible if we are guided by the acharyas, and that is why there are acharyas, and that is why the acharyas, they write books, they give us guidance, they teach us the principles of Bhagavad Gita so that we can perform devotional service with full heart. But if our heart is still on the platform of desiring sense gratification, even subtly, then we cannot fully go to Krishna. So, bhakti, this is... It is a sensual matter. All the senses should be engaged in serving the senses of Krishna. And thus we decorate Krishna very nicely. We feed Krishna very nicely. We sing very nicely for Krishna. It's a sensual matter. But the matter of channeling our desire fully toward Krishna, this principle has to be understood. And how to execute it has to be understood. Why should we do that? If we feel happy in bhakti, then if we're happy singing for Krishna and decorating the deities, then why should we hear all this philosophy? But we have to be very careful that happiness is not, there's not even any tinge of desire for personal enjoyment. That is why kirtan is incomplete without shravan. And kirtan means not only chanting the names of Krishna, but also reciting Bhagavad Gita and the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita and all the points of that. Now, that is also shravan and kirtan, and that is required. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he promoted Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam. Kalo Nasteva, 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 Datira, Nyata. But he also taught his followers to teach the philosophy and practice of Krishna consciousness, including all the rules and regulations. We find the rules and regulations of devotional service given in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the book compiled by Rupa Goswami. The very title of this book is the most attractive title possible for any book. Of course, you may say the other titles are also the most attractive. But the ocean of the nectar of the juice of devotion, the rich juice of devotion, I mean, what could be more attractive than that? But in that very book are all the rules and regulations also. Because these are required to come to the platform that we are eligible for performing bhakti. Now, of course, in the bhakti vriksha, where all these things, presumably, are taught, that people are, those who come are encouraged, we hope, to read Srila Prabhupada's books, to understand the philosophy, and to follow the rules and regulations. But the understanding has to be there that, yeah, okay, so the process through the heart that's possible, particularly in India, more so than in America, or among non-Hindus, you could say. Because even though non-Hindus in America, we could say your average American, they may be attracted to Krishna consciousness by festivals, but they'll have many, many questions before they could commit themselves to Krishna consciousness, the average American. So you may say, well, that's not really necessary in India, because many people with a little philosophy, or even without speaking much philosophy at all, they can take to Krishna consciousness, especially if they come from a Vaishnav background, or they have some background of this, which many Indians do, because the Vaishnav culture is a major strand within what is called Hinduism. There are many people who, if they've been exposed from childhood to a lot of Rama Bhakti and Krishna Bhakti and Vishnu Bhakti, so for them to take to Krishna consciousness, they may not need a lot of persuasion. It may be a lot easier to bring them to Krishna consciousness be by having a lot of kirtan and being nice, and they can take to it. But still, they require to understand the philosophy and principles of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, they are liable to be misled or to not make much progress. And if the neophyte doesn't understand, or is not taught and doesn't come to understand the, at least in a basic way, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, then they're going to remain neophyte for a long time, and they're very liable to deviate, and it may be even up to 10 years, 15 years, 20 years that I've seen it, and people just, some cheetah comes along and, oh, he's so wonderful, and they're attracted. Or it may be that within our society, subtly, we institutionalize the bhakti of the heart and leave behind much of the legacy that Srila Prabhupada gave us. That's why I am a little bit concerned about the spreading of kirtan melas in our society, which may seem to be very wonderful. We have long kirtans. But I see that Srila Prabhupada's process was to rise early in the morning, have Mangalati, have class, have all these. Not that you stay up late and get up late, but you get up early, go to Mangalati, and you have a regular class on the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So if you have all of those things and more kirtan, all well and good. But if it's the emphasis is only on kirtan, without hearing the philosophy, or even if you have a class glorifying the holy name, we also need classes help us to distinguish from reality from illusion, which is right there in the beginning of the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. So I lived many years in Bengal, and where the kirtan culture is very strong, but because the culture of hearing in the manner that our acharyas teach Krishna consciousness is not strong, then the whole culture, when myself and others, we went to Bangladesh first in the late 1970s. Although people had a natural attraction to Krishna, that was in their culture. But because of lack of knowledge of the kind of preaching that separates reality from illusion for the welfare of all, they were all in a lot of illusion. While being attracted to Krishna, they were eating fish and smoking and so many things. I was surprised. How can people chant Hare Krishna and have so much attraction for chanting, and when the chanting's over, the smoking begins? I was surprised. People had a lot of heart, a lot of feeling for kirtan, but because they were not trained, that their mental processes separate reality from illusion, they weren't able to make any real progress, even by their chanting. So we shall have to be very careful in our society, because it is relatively easy to bring people to Krishna consciousness, at least Hindus, many Hindus, not all Hindus, but many by the heart. But we should be careful not to be desirous only of increasing the numbers by the heart process. But when people come in, we can bring them in by the heart, for sure. And very few people come in by the mind only. And you have to, what are you listening to? The holy name or what I'm saying? You're not listening to what I'm saying. So why don't you, if you have to chant your rounds, then you kindly go and do so. But if you want to listen to this, please listen to this. You can't do both. So, increasing the numbers without training, we should be very careful that in doing so, we don't, to use Srila Prabhupada's analogy, put so much water in the milk and increase the quantity in such a way that there's no nourishment left in the milk. You see, here's 1 gallon of milk, or 1 liter of milk. We want to increase the quantity. We need more milk. There's not enough for everyone here. We want to give everyone milk. What will we do? No problem. Put it in a big container, put a lot of water, and you see it's still white, and we can give everyone milk. But they won't get the same. They won't get the nourishment that they would get from taking milk, which is not diluted. It's not the same quality. So we shall have to be careful that increasing the quantity, we don't do so by decreasing the quality. And it is relatively easy to bring people in just by Jai Haribo. And we increase and we increase and we increase. But if in doing so, we're so careful, we don't want to upset anyone by telling them things like you're in Maya, or that, well, you have to give this up, so we don't say, well, you don't really have to give up. Here we go, contraceptives. Do we ever hear this? You hear it from Prabhupada. Do we hear it? Better don't tell, because then, you know, people, they might not come. So let them come. You don't tell them. They don't know. They don't follow. They're chanting Hare Krishna. We're increasing the numbers. Everything's very nice, but they're breaking the regulative principles.
Heavy.
It's a heavy thing to say. Huh? But who? Someone has to say. If you say, then no one will come to the lecture. If you don't say, no one will know, and they won't make any advancement. So someone has to say. Otherwise, we may think that, yeah, everything, no one said, so it must be okay. But it's not okay. We have to, there are many principles. We only take food that is cooked by devotees. It's a clear principle. If we say that, then people may not like it, because they like to eat so many nice things. So we don't say, and we get more people come, because we're just the heart and not the mind. It's so increasing, but people are not making real advancement. Even they may be good preachers and bringing many people, just like there are so many Upa Sampradaya. Must have been many good preachers in the Ramananda Sampradaya, otherwise how could they have increased to have so many people? But they weren't giving the real thing. They weren't teaching that Rama is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the impersonal is subordinate to Him. No, they weren't preaching that. So we'll find almost all sadhus in India, they're all at least drinking tea. Very common thing. Mm. We go to some ashram. Chai Pinega. And they're surprised. Oh, they don't drink tea. Why not? What's wrong with you? But it's sense gratification. You can't offer it to Krishna. So you may think it's a very small thing, but it's for my sense gratification, not for Krishna's. So this training is required. This training is required. And it may come, it should come. You can bring people in by the heart, but don't say not the mind. Because if we say we're bringing people by the heart and not the mind, that just presumes that people can immediately come with their whole heart to Krishna and that their mind will automatically come, and just by being nice to them and friendly that they'll make advancement. But that's not the process given by our acharyas and by Krishna. We know that the mind, if not properly trained, is going to misguide us. So we have to take the proper training. So I was concerned there that this, of course, I know this is a statement of someone who's having their first exposure to, not the first, but is quite new to all of this, so she may have misunderstood it, but sounds pretty dangerous to me, through the heart and not the mind. And we hear a lot of this, you know, in our movement. The heart, oh, I really felt wonderful. Or this singer, so nice, sings so nicely. And that becomes the qualification for a singer. You don't see whether they follow the regulated principles. You don't see whether they're chanting 16 rounds. The main thing, they sing nicely. And that becomes the qualification. But then the whole thing becomes nama-parada. We have a nama-parada mela. Because we're just concerned with how nicely the person sings and not whether they're following nicely and what their philosophical understanding is. So, sadhu sabdhan. Be careful. So there you are. Thank you very much for coming to the lecture, and I don't expect to see any of you ever again. But I have to throw in a joke so that you might come again. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Please don't clap. It wasn't a performance. It wasn't meant to entertain me. If you clapped, I did something wrong. So, any question, comment, or protest, you can now voice it. Yes, please.
Maharaj, in Gita, Sri Krishna says, the people who worship me, no need to worship any god and demigods. But but in the
Vrindavan Leela, which verse are you talking about in particular?
Yes, but in Vrindavan Leela, Radharani.
Which verse? Can you give a verse in Bhagavad Gita?
Krishna says to Arjuna,
it's true, Krishna says that. I'm just saying if you know any Bhagavad Gita verses. If you know any Bhagavad Gita verses before you start talking about Vrindavan Leela.
No, I'm telling there is a relation. Vrindavan Leela.
Kon shlok balun.
Kon shlok?
Ekta shlok balun, Gita take.
Gita,
এই বিষয় যে ভগবান কৃষ্ণ বলেন যে অন দেবতা উপাসনা কর উচিত
দর্শন যোগে
কোন শ্লোক বলুন ওই সংস্কৃত
আমার প্রশ্ন হচ্ছে যে মাই কোশ্চেন ইজ ইন বৃন্দাবন লীলা
সেই জন্য আমি বলছি, আমি জিজ্ঞেস করছি আপনার কি অধিকার আছে বৃন্দাবন লীলা সম্বন্ধে কথা বলো যদি আপনি ঠিক মতো ভগবদ গীতার কথা বুঝে না। ভগবদ গীতা হচ্ছেন প্রাথমিক শিক্ষা এবং বৃন্দাবন লীলা হচ্ছে সর্বোচ্চ শিক্ষা। তো প্রথমে আমাদের শিখতে হবে। How much can we understand about Vrindavan Leela if we don't even understand the basics of Bhagavad Gita? So that's what I was saying. That's the problem in Bengal. That people have a natural attraction to Krishna and they'll hear so many Vrindavan Leelas, but they never heard even basic things of Bhagavad Gita. So for us in the beginning, we have to know there is Vrindavan Leela. But we require to hear Bhagavad Gita more than Vrindavan Leela. Srila Prabhupada spoke what? Bhagavad Gita philosophy, isn't it? He didn't give discourses on Vrindavan Leela. He pointed us there, but he taught us. We worship Srila Prabhupada as the great Acharya who saved us from Maya. Because he gave us what we needed instead of what we wanted. That is the difference between an acharya and a cheetah. They give us what we need and not what we want. What we think, I want to hear about Vrindavan Leela. Okay, very good. You hear about Vrindavan Leela. But first hear about Bhagavad Gita. Then, when you're ready, Vishoy Charya Kabe Shuddha Habe Man Tabe Hamaherabo Sri Vrindavan. When we're actually ready, then we should discuss Vrindavan Leela. Not that we'll never be ready, but as Srila Prabhupada writes here, as I read already, unless one's mind is filled with thoughts of Krishna, feelings for Krishna, and a desire to serve Krishna, the mind will be filled with material activities. Those who have given up all material activities and have ceased thinking of them should always retain the ambition to think of Krishna. So we should hear about, we should know there's Krishna's Vrindavan Leela, but we cannot enter there unless we are free from material desires. No, nor can we understand it. So in Vrindavan Leela, we'll find there's also gopis worshipping Katyayani. Did I have no prashnas?
Yes.
But then you'll have to see how the acharyas comment. First of all, that Katyayani is not, she is a fully spiritual devi who the gopis worship for the sake of serving Krishna. Otherwise, demigod worship in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, he says, kamais taith tai hrita jnana prapadyantena devataha. Those whose minds are distorted by material desires, they worship other gods than myself. So the gopis, they certainly had desire, but their desire was not distorted their desire was not material, it was fully pure desire to serve Krishna. So that's not for you and me. Yeah, please. You'd like to speak in the mic so that others can better hear you.
Thank you for being with us tonight. Thanks for the one to come out and put us up in their home tonight. I did have a question concerning the impersonalism.
Okay.
Yeah, you said you discovered with the Ram temple. Have you seen a pattern like that, or is there a risk of this impersonalism with the Vishnu temples as well? I've only got one experience with the Vishnu temple, and I was always curious.
In this material world, deviation from the pure is possible at any moment. What is Hinduism? Originally, the Vedas were given by Krishna to Brahma, and that was spread by different rishis. So how did we end up with Hinduism, this which Srila Prabhupada describes, as I have it here. Here's a quote. Oh. There's a very good quote. Oh. I'm sure Prabhupada regarding this. Let me see if I can find it. Srila Prabhupada quotes this, Kamaistaista Hrita Gyana Prapadyante Nyadevataha. This is from Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Leela, chapter 10, text 11, purport. Those whose minds are distorted by material desires surrender unto demigods. Unquote. Unfortunately, those who do not cultivate Krishna consciousness and do not properly understand the Vedic knowledge. See, you don't properly understand the Vedic knowledge. The Vedic knowledge is there. That's the root of what is called Hinduism. But those who do not properly understand the Vedic knowledge accept any rascal to be an incarnation of God, and they are of the opinion that one can become an incarnation simply by worshipping a demigod. This philosophical hodgepodge exists under the name of the Hindu religion, but the Krishna conscious movement does not approve of it. Indeed, we strongly condemn it. Yeah, another from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita also. This and the position of the present so-called Hindu religion, being predominantly conducted by the Mayavad philosophy, has become a hodgepodge institution of various concocted ideas. Mayavadis greatly fear the Krishna consciousness and accuse it of spoiling the Hindu religion. So, originally there was pure teachings. Someone changed it, and changed it, and little more, little more, little more, little more. Can worshippers of Vishnu also become... Can worshippers of Vishnu also become deviated? They can, if they don't worship properly. Just like the Ramanuja Sampradaya. For hundreds of years, they were, especially in South India, the tradition was going on. Hare Krishna. The tradition was going on. But nowadays you'll find these Iyengar families. In Tamil Nadu, the Brahmins who used to, traditionally they were worshippers of Vishnu in the temple, now many of them are eating meat, drinking alcohol, having illicit sex, and there's not that much scope for gambling in India, but I'm sure when there is, which will be coming, then Narendra Modi wanted to set up the biggest casino in the world in Kutch, by the way. BJP Jai? I don't know. Uh, So they're breaking all the principles, and many of them worship Sai Baba. And for some time this cult, so-called Kalki avatar, was popular, so some of them worshipped him. So whenever I find this, I tell them, why are you doing this? Your forefathers will be ashamed and disgusted. They'll be very upset, but they don't care because their consciousness is distorted. So why do they do that? How did it happen that in a tradition for hundreds of years they were worshipping Vishnu, Ranganath, Balaji? How did that happen? That now they're worshipping Sai Baba. Why? Because they were not, the tradition of teaching the philosophy of Krishna consciousness was broken, and they were just left with the rituals. So they didn't understand why they were doing what they were doing. So they ended up worshipping Sai Baba, and, well, some of them worship. Those who eat meat mostly don't worship Sai Baba. They don't worship anyone. They have no interest in any of these things. Or they may also go to the temple of Vishnu sometimes when there's a wedding or Upanayanam ceremony. They'll go just to, it's part of their tradition, but just to show we're Brahmins. So that rigid philosophical teaching was stopped, and therefore the mind has to be filled with something. So it becomes filled with nonsense, and they deviate. So if we don't teach that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we're all to surrender to Him, and Mayavad is rascaldom, unless we teach that, if we think, well, that's nice, we like to worship Krishna, but all these things in Prabhupada's books about rascals, and fools, it's not very nice, is it? We may think like that, and then we're in trouble. We may think, well, Darwin's theory, Prabhupada's against that, but anyway, they teach it in the schools, and he must be right. They teach it in the schools. Srila Prabhupada said, the more we kick out Darwin's theory, the more we make advancement in spiritual life. You can find that. It's right in Light Comes from Light, if you ever read it. I hope you read that book. So here you are. There you go. Now you can say that Bhaktivikasa Swami didn't only speak philosophy, he also gave something for spiritual advancement. It's a quote from Srila Prabhupada, who I have full faith in, and I hope you also have full faith in him. How you can make spiritual advancement. The more you kick out Darwin's theory, the more you make spiritual advancement. So you want to do that? You want to make spiritual advancement? If you don't kick out Darwin's theory, you're never going to make any spiritual advancement. You cannot be Krishna conscious and also believe in Darwin's theory, because it's antithetical to spiritual advancement. Krishna says, Aham Bija Pradapita. Krishna is the seed-giving father of all living beings. Not that everything came from chromosomes or whatever, by chance. So, if we like to take only the nice things of Krishna consciousness without the nasty things, then we end up with half a chicken. Mm-hmm. You maybe know that example. That one man, he had a chicken, and he was very intelligent, so he thought, every day I get an egg, which is good, but every day I have to feed the chicken, which isn't good, because it costs me money, so chop the front of the chicken off and just keep the back part. Very intelligent, but he didn't get an egg. So he may think, I like all the nice things of Krishna consciousness, but I don't like all this stuff, fools and rascals, and having to eat only food cooked by devotees, and all this sectarian stuff being against Mayavadis, and actually what's wrong with them, and actually they're quite nice, and we like kirtan, which is sung very nicely, and it doesn't really matter whether one's following the principles or not, because if he sings nicely, he must love Krishna, right? How can you sing so nicely unless you love, and so on, and so on, and so on, and go to hell. Yes, that's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Nam Aparad leads us where? To Krishna? No, to hell. So, how did worshippers of Vishnu, can they also deviate? Of course, anyone can deviate at any time. Unless we hear this kind of discussion. If we don't like to hear it, and we just think of how to increase the numbers more and more and more and more, then everything will become weak. And then we end up with, we can't distinguish between Mayavad and Krishna consciousness and this great movement which Srila Prabhupada literally gave his blood for. It just becomes rubbish. That is the danger. And Prabhupada said that, so I'm quoting him. So be careful. Hear what you need to hear, not what you like to hear. Don't be misled by those who give you what you like to hear. So, anything else? Yeah, okay. Next, we can pass the mic all the way back there. Yes, please.
Thank you, Maharaj. So, you discussed the Kanishka Adhikari and Vipinda Mahaprabhu saying that by step, the devotee progresses towards the platform. My understanding of that is that is an increase in faith.
Yes, exactly. Shraddha Vanjan Hoy Bhakti Adhikari Uttam Madhyam Kanishta Shraddha Anusari. Faith is the condition to be a devotee, and according to one's development of faith, one is classified as a topmost, intermediate, or neophyte devotee. But what is that faith? Shraddha Shabde Vishas Kare Shudira Nischoy Krishna Bhakti Koile Sarva Kama Krita Hoy. Faith means to be convinced that by serving Krishna everything is done. There's no need to do anything else.
So, thank you, Maharaj. The question I had was that increase in faith, and you mentioned that it is by performing devotion.
In other words, faith, it's not some general belief in Krishna, but conviction in a specific philosophical principle. It's not just a faith is distinguished here from feeling. You may say, well, someone's very advanced because they have a lot of feeling for Krishna. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, the one who has great faith in Krishna, and that faith is the conviction that by serving Krishna there's no need to do, everything is complete. So it's not just feeling. You may see people have a lot of feeling for Krishna. But that may not be on the actual devotional principle. That may be that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur spoke of people's imagined Krishna. They're imagining Krishna to be someone who he is not. Who is Krishna? Krishna is the object of our service. We are to serve him. If we imagine Krishna in any other way, if we think that Krishna is meant to serve me, or I should be happy by doing bhakti, of course we do become happy by performing bhakti, but if we have any other conception of Krishna other than the person to whom I have to give every cell, every atom of my being, then we're not actually performing pure devotional service. So, what's your question?
The question was that development of faith, from what I'm understanding, is heavily philosophical. Or is there, what level of...
Yeah, it's philosophical, that's right. That's why Vyasadeva and all the Acharyas have given us philosophical understanding. It's not that everyone is or can be very philosophical, but everyone should understand the basic principles, even if not everyone is highly learned. But everyone has to understand the basic principles, that we have to understand Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. We have to accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is full of all opulences and power. He is an ocean of rasa. What is the difference between Maya and pure consciousness? That we are jivas. I'm just paraphrasing the first pramayas of the nine pramayas plus Brahma, that which is to be understood. So we should understand these basic points. We have to understand. We may not be highly philosophical, but we should be able to. If we can't distinguish between what is actual Krishna consciousness and Mayavad, and actual Krishna consciousness and Prakriti Sahajya imitation, then we're going to be misled. So actually it is required that every devotee is philosophical. Even if they're not a great scholar, but they should, just like we find Gorky Shardas Babaji Maharaj, you may say he wasn't a great scholar, but he had a very clear understanding of what is actual Krishna consciousness and what isn't. That is required. Without that, we're definitely going to be misled. And if someone comes along and tells us that, well, you don't have to follow all these principles, you just chant Hare Krishna, it's all in the heart. We may be attracted to that and misled unless we understand it, unless we're trained to understand that this person is cheating us, not speaking according to the teachings of Shastra. That is one kind of sense gratification. Sense gratification blocks our Krishna consciousness. So yeah, every devotee needs to be philosophical. Not necessarily greatly scholarly, with all the subtle nuances of understanding, but there are some very basic things we have to understand. And that is my fear, which was why I spoke on this topic, that if we say the heart, not the mind, we're going to end up with a bunch of, you know, in Prabhupada's name, we're going to end up with the Prakriti Sahajya movement. And it's quite possible if we say things like that. However good it looks, however much the numbers increase, that is not the criterion. Otherwise, there are so many Sahajiya Sampradayas and Mayavadi Sampradayas. There are so many bogus gurus, you have so many more followers. When Amma comes, did she ever come to Dallas? So many more people came to see her than they're coming to see me, right? But if you hear from me, you'll be much, you know, it's unlimitedly times more benefited than if you go to Amma. Because I just speak what comes from Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, and she's totally bogus. And if you think that she's anything but totally bogus, then you are totally bogus also. So these are facts that by Prabhupada's mercy we understand. So if we think we have to adjust our preaching so that we'll get more people like Amma, that even to think like that is somewhat dangerous. Our thought has to, always we have to know what is reality, what is the truth, and how to bring many people to that. Not how we bring many people and then later we might give the truth. But generally if you give the truth to people and by presenting something else, that when you do give the truth, the actual fact, then they'll go away. So better give the real thing right from the beginning, and those who are sincere will appreciate it. Yeah, there's one more question there. This gentleman's had his hand up for some time. Yeah.
About the Vasu Riksha programs,
yeah.
You mentioned it was that person that wrote you the letter, it was more of a heart-to-heart connection rather than a mind connection.
Well, I read out what she said.
I mean, some of the Bhakti Riksha manuals that are published and even the ones that are online,
yeah,
kind of point one towards that.
Is it?
So it should be more of a personal connection.
I'm pointing out that the dangers in that. I'm not saying it's all wrong or all bogus, but I'm just pointing out that if we emphasize the heart to the exclusion of the mind or to the exclusion of philosophy, we're in a very dangerous situation. And I believe our movement is going more and more towards that dangerous situation. Just like I'm saying, kirtan, more and more we have the idea that kirtan is something, the kirtan singer has to be a very good singer, very pleasing singer. And what principles they follow, what their level of commitment to Krishna consciousness, what their philosophical understanding is not even questioned. So that's very dangerous. Yes.
Maharaj, my obeisances to you.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I have a question about Mayavad. And Srila Prabhupada, he's been on mantra. The second one is that he's coming to the West to deliver Western people from impersonalism and voidism. And is this impersonalism and voidism from Mayavad? And if so, how, and if not, why not?
Is this impersonalism and voidism?
That Srila Prabhupada is supposed to is delivering the Western countries from. Is it different from Mayavad?
Is it different? Is the impersonalism and voidism that Srila Prabhupada is delivering the Western countries from, is it different from the classic Mayavad of India? Yeah, it is in some. Yes and no. Just like the Mayavad that's widespread in India today is also different from the classic Mayavad, like this Amma and Sri Sri and all these other. They're not following the process of what Shankaracharya gave. But it's generally the same. Generally the same in as much as Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who we surrender to, who we have to surrender to, is that is not delineated, and there's a general idea that just, even by emphasis self-actualization, of course you have to speak in very vague terms because they themselves speak in vague terms, and because they all have their own different brands of Mayavad. But the very fact that they keep everything vague, they do not delineate Krishna as the Supreme Personality, even that, and whether it's within the walls of ISKCON or outside, if we do not clearly delineate that Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then we are feeding the tendency of the conditioned soul toward Mayavad, to think that we do not have to surrender to Krishna, that we are Krishna, we are the enjoyer, and that in classic Mayavad and in modern Mayavad, the idea that the guru is directly Bhagavan, which is Mayavad, that's there. Well, I have no idea what it means to be Bhagavan. So yeah, there are differences, but it's the same basic poison.
It's like there's an idea that if it's not Shankara, it's okay.
If it's not Shankara, it's okay. Whose idea is that? If it's not Prabhupada, it's not okay.
Yeah.
That's a better understanding. You can't say it's not deviating from Guru, Sadhu and Shastra because there's no Shastra. So how can you deviate from it? Mm-hmm. Anyway, after reading Prabhupada's books, and if after reading Prabhupada's books one can't immediately understand that these people are totally bogus, like Amma, then you never really read them at all. You might have a Bhakti Shastra exam, but it's all useless.